Good morning, and thank you for joining us for today's media conference call. My name is Lucia, and I will be moderating today's call, where we will be discussing an exciting new community mobilization initiative that's being launched by Lumina Foundation. This effort involves the first 20 cities participating from around the country, and we are pleased to have reporters on the call from several of those cities. The official press release is now live on Lumina Foundation's homepage of the website. And I'm pleased to tell you that we have two distinguished speakers here today to talk about the partnership and to answer some of your questions. Our first speaker will be Jamie Marisotis, President and Chief Executive Officer at Lumina. He will be followed by Haley Glover, Strategy Director at Lumina. After our speakers provide their remarks, we will open the call to questions. Finally, I also want to let everyone know that we are recording today's call for archival purposes. Now I will turn the call over to President Jamie Marisotis.
Thank you very much, Lucia. Good morning, everyone. I think I should begin with just a brief, very brief introduction of Lumina Foundation for those of you who don't know us. Lumina is the nation's largest private foundation, private endowment focused solely on higher education, or sometimes called post-secondary education. In that sense, we're unique among our philanthropic peers because we are a large national foundation with a singular focus. And our mission is really defined in large part by a goal that we've set, that goal being that we want to see an increase in the percentage of Americans with high-quality post-secondary degrees, certificates, and other credentials to 60% by 2025. So that goal defines literally all of our work and has been a guide for us as we determine how best to allocate all of our financial, human, and other resources. Lumina's work is driven by a strategic plan, and the two key elements of that plan are, first, efforts to design and build a 21st century system of higher education, things like rethinking the student finance model of higher education, developing new delivery models to deliver high-quality learning to a lot more people through mechanisms like competency-based learning and other approaches, and helping to rethink the system of credentials so that what students know and are able to do is the central point of what students get out of their college or post-secondary education. The other main element of our work is mobilizing all of the key actors that need to focus on this goal of increasing post-secondary attainment, from state and federal policymakers to higher education leaders to this work that we are now launching in a significant way in terms of regions, communities, and metropolitan areas. Now, increasing attainment is critical for many reasons. We know that two-thirds of all of the jobs being created in the United States today require some form of post-secondary credential. To give you some perspective on how much our economy has changed, in the early 1970s, only about a quarter of all jobs required post-secondary education. Now, right now, about 38% of the total U.S. population holds at least an associate's degree. As you can see, we've got a long way to go. In short, I think it's abundantly clear that we're facing a tremendous gap in the necessary talent to power our economy. In this world that we're now living in, this post-recession, knowledge-based economy, the currency of this labor market is talent, skills and abilities that can lead to both individual success as well as collective well-being. That talent must come overwhelmingly from some type of post-secondary learning environment, given what we know about the jobs themselves. So it's apparent that the finish line in our education system can no longer be a high school diploma. It simply isn't sufficient. The new finish line for the majority of Americans has to be a high-quality post-secondary credential, a certificate, an associate degree, a BA, or beyond. Now, communities are absolutely key to getting to this new finish line. The ability to get a good job, to make more money, to have a high quality of life, all of these things have very important implications for communities. And there are many national and global experts that have made the point that the success of communities in metropolitan areas is increasingly derived from the educational attainment of the citizens in those communities. People like Richard Florida, or the leaders from the Brookings Institution's Metropolitan Policy Program and others, have noted that these regions with high concentrations of people who are well-educated and those who work in specific fields like healthcare and technology and other fields for which post-secondary education is a prerequisite, these communities tend to have the highest levels of economic development. In fact, cities with the highest concentrations of college-educated workers experienced the greatest absolute increase in wages and salaries between 2006, before the recession began, and 2011. Raises were lowest for those cities with the highest concentrations of lower-skill working-class jobs, according to Richard Florida. Now, much of the national discussion about post-secondary attainment in the last 2 years has been from a top-down perspective, from a national perspective, like Luminous, like President Obama, governors, national organizations, education groups, et cetera. Leadership from this policy level and from college presidents and others is absolutely essential. Yet we know that local communities derive the most direct benefit from increased attainment, a better talent base from which to create economic opportunity, more civically and socially conscious citizens, a higher quality of life, et cetera. So our intent with this new work with employers and civic leaders, community-based organizations, K-12 schools, colleges and universities and others, is to provide resources, knowledge, expertise, as well as financial support, and most importantly, the ability to build relationships with other communities through a creation of a network. So let me turn it over now to Haley Glover, our strategy director at Lumina Foundation, who's leading this work, to tell you a little bit more about how this will work, who we're working with, and what we hope to achieve. Haley?
Thanks, Jamie. Excuse me. I am very proud to announce the first 20 cities who are partnering with Lumina and our national organization colleagues. These 20 communities represent the leading edge of a movement we're seeing in cities across the country, communities collaborating around and prioritizing post-secondary attainment. As Jamie discussed, post-secondary attainment is linked to just about every positive outcome communities are interested in achieving, from lower unemployment to higher incomes, higher volunteerism, and higher civic participation. We created this mobilization effort to provide support for communities already investing themselves in higher attainment work. And so our first 20 communities represent areas that have set a post-secondary attainment goal, have built collaboration capable of action, and have selected a post-secondary focus population or issue or set of issues to work on. Through the partnership, Lumina and our national partners will provide communities with some great resources geared toward enabling more informed decision-making and priority setting, more nimble course correcting, and tracking results. We're working with the Brookings Institution Metropolitan Policy Program to provide communities with an analysis of their key economic drivers, skills gaps, and education needs. We're working with the National Student Clearinghouse to provide cities with a solid baseline data on student enrollment, persistence in college, and credential completion on a close-to-real-time basis. We're also partnering with Strive Together to enable communities to realistically assess and address the strengths and weaknesses of their collaborations. Based on this information, existing community plans, and targeted assistance from a cadre of national experts, partner communities will develop an action plan for the next 3 years, identifying what they want to achieve, how they're going to achieve it, and how they're going to know they've achieved it. Lumina will work directly with each of the communities to help refine these plans. Further, we've lined up a wonderful group of technical assistance providers, including the Council for Adult and Experiential Learning, National League of Cities, Strive Together, and others to provide direct assistance to communities as they develop and execute their plans. Along with our partners from the Institute for Higher Education Policy and DCA Incorporated, we'll be delivering a robust learning agenda. As I mentioned, these cities represent the leading edge of a growing movement, and within the first cohort, there is a lot of experience, good and bad, with developing and implementing post-secondary attainment agendas. We're creating a national network of communities working on similar issues that will not only provide city leaders with the peer support and advice they need, but will enable us and our evaluators from the OMG Center to find out exactly what works and what doesn't, so all communities can work from the best playbooks. Finally, Lumina is providing these first 20 cities with funding of up to $200,000 over the next 3 years. This funding is flexible. Cities will be able to utilize it for a wide variety of purposes tailored to their plans, including consulting, data, personnel, program design, meeting and convening, and other purposes. I've mentioned a number of our national thought partners already. We're thrilled with the caliber and reach of the national organizations working with us to align work within communities and assist those in this partnership. Our national partners include the American Chamber of Commerce Executives, the Aspen Institute Forum for Community Solutions, Brookings Institution, the Council for Adult and Experiential Learning, DCA Incorporated, Excellencia in Education, the Harwood Institute, the Institute for Higher Education Policy, National College Access Network, the National League of Cities, National Student Clearinghouse, the OMG Center, Rockefeller Philanthropic Advisors, Say Yes to Education Foundation, Strive Together, and United Way Worldwide. Not only do these organizations and this particular combination of organizations represent some of the best minds in higher education movement, they address almost every facet of the post-secondary attainment agenda, including equity in attainment, business engagement, adult learners, veterans, grassroots organization, collaboration for collective impact, whole city reform, disengaged youth engagement, Latino student success, and higher education policy and practice. Further, this effort will work across the national organizations working in cities to promote collaboration, ensuring alignment within cities, and reinforcement of messages and ideas. We are all working toward the same objectives. With that, I'm very pleased to announce the first cohort of cities with whom Lumina and our national colleagues have the privilege of partnering: Albuquerque, New Mexico, Boston, Massachusetts, Buffalo, New York, Cincinnati, Ohio, the Columbus, Indiana region, Dayton, Ohio, the Fort Wayne, Indiana region, Queensboro, North Carolina, Houston, Texas, Kalamazoo, Michigan, Louisville, Kentucky, Memphis, Tennessee, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Providence, Rhode Island, the Quad Cities located across Iowa and Illinois, San Antonio, Texas, Santa Ana, California, South Seattle and South King County, Washington, and Syracuse, New York. These communities and regions represent not only a geographic and size-diverse range, but also reflect the wide array of community priorities across the partnership. In this group, we have communities focused on the K-12 post-secondary pipeline, whole city reform around education, adult and returning learners, or those with some college or no degree, and Latino student success. We all have also have communities achieving results through collective impact approaches, through results-based accountability approaches, through Say Yes to Education's model of civic infrastructure change. We have communities working on specific locations within cities, those working with the city proper, and those working across much larger regions, which include both urban and rural communities. Finally, leadership comes from all sectors. In this cohort of communities, we are seeing leadership from Community Foundation, Chambers of Commerce, United Ways, Community Policy Centers, city governments, independent and unique city organizations, and in some cases, higher education institutions. But the bottom line, all of the cities are focused on attainment. They are all achieving their goals through collaboration, and they are all addressing equity gaps, whether for racial or ethnic groups, low-income students, or other traditionally underserved student populations. Right now, in a conference center down the street, about 140 people from these 20 communities and our national partners are convening to get their planning started. Over the next several months, we'll be working intensively to build action plans and align technical assistance to maximize results. We're looking forward to spreading the word about what these communities are doing and adding to their numbers over the next year as we plan to engage up to 75 cities in partnership. With that, I'll hand the call over to my colleague, Lucia. Thank you.
Thank you, Haley. Now, Jamie and Haley will be happy to take your questions. We will try to get to everyone's questions over the next 10 minutes. I'll now turn the conference call back to our operator, Justin, to direct you on how to ask a question.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, all you'll need to do is press star followed by 1. You will hear a tone indicating you have been placed in the queue, and you may remove yourself at any time by pressing the pound key. And we do ask, if you're using a speakerphone today, that please pick up the handset before pressing the number keys. Again, that's star followed by 1. One moment for the first question. And our first question comes from the line of Amos Brown of WTLC Radio. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. A two-part question, one simple, one a little bit more complex. When you all said Columbus, Indiana region and Fort Wayne region, geographically, what do you mean? And what was the criteria for choosing the communities? And then the obvious question for those of us in Indianapolis, why was Indianapolis not considered?
Sure. So Columbus, Indiana, and Fort Wayne, Indiana, both reflect smaller-sized communities, but that are working with community organizations that have a wide reach. So the Fort Wayne, Indiana region actually goes beyond Fort Wayne to include some of the outlying counties around the city. And Columbus, Indiana, actually works across, I believe, a 10-county region that is surrounding the Columbus, Indiana area, which, if you're from Indiana, you'll know is in very dire need of assistance in post-secondary attainment with some very low-attaining counties there. The second question, the criteria that we had used. So, number one, keep in mind that this was the first 20 of up to 75. So we are pacing ourselves to manage both the pace of the cities as well as the pace of the work for our own internal management purposes. So because a city was not selected for the first round does not actually mean that they were not qualified to participate in the first round. It was a matter of pacing. Indianapolis actually has a very robust conversation going, led by the Talent Alliance out of IUPUI, and that has been, I think, very successful in getting the conversation started within the city, and we're particularly fond and admire the city's or the Talent Alliance's report card, which is a very robust data tool for the city to use in tracking the reports. The criteria for selection in the partnership were referenced earlier. They were the setting of a post-secondary goal, having capacity and evidence of an action orientation, and trying to pick a focused population for work. And those were really the three areas that we focused on in selecting the first round. Obviously, it's not an exclusive club. There are many cities that are in one stage or another of this work, and we're really looking forward to adding to the ranks over the next year.
Thanks for your question, Amos.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Carol Lee Adams of Education Week. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering over what time frame you expect to announce the remaining 75 cities, and are you still open to applications for cities?
Absolutely. We will be moving towards 75, which is our main goal for this work, over the next approximately year. We're working on an invitation basis, and because it's about pacing ourselves and finding the cities that actually have evidence of action and have oriented themselves around this priority. So we actually have identified quite a few places that are working on this topic, and it's wonderful that we've been able to utilize the networks of the organizations I mentioned on the phone. So many of the communities we are hopeful and working with have been identified by organizations like Strive Together as a part of their National Collective Impact Network, the National League of Cities as a part of their education policy network, and other organizations. What we plan on doing is introducing two or three additional cohorts over the next approximately year of about 25 cities apiece. We should have all of the participating communities on board by first quarter of 2015. The term of the program aligns with Lumina's strategic plan. We'll be working with them through the end of 2016 and hopefully through the design of the program, enabling sustainable organizations and sustainable programming in the cities.
Just to clarify on the money, the maximum amount that each city would get is $200,000. Is that correct? And was there any matching money required from the community?
Yes. The first cohort will receive up to $200,000 allocated over the time frame we'll be working with them. We did not require matching dollars, so obviously that is encouraged.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Emily McCord of WYSO Public Radio. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering, are there certain requirements that you hold these cities and regions accountable for spending that money, or is this a lump sum to be used at a region's discretion?
Right. The funding is actually remarkably flexible. However, we do make sure, given Lumina's restrictions as a private foundation, that absolutely none of the money are used for any political or lobbying purpose, and none of the funding is used for scholarships. We are attempting to be very flexible in meeting the cities where they are and determining exactly what they need to fill the gaps in their work. So the cities may use this for as I mentioned, personnel, data purchasing, consulting, that kind of thing. We are also really looking for the cities to be held accountable in fulfilling their action plans. Now, the city action plans are going to be really individualized across the array. No city is going to have the same plan as any other. And that's really why we designed the program this way, is because every city is legitimately different. We are holding ourselves and our partnership accountable on a variety of metrics. We are looking for at least half of the cities participating in the partnership to achieve many of their indicators. And obviously the ones that we are most interested in are those that lead to post-secondary attainment, and that those are increased preparation for post-secondary attainment, enrollment, stick-with-itness in school once they're there, completion. So we will be really looking across the cities to see the impact of this on a meta level and looking to the cities to fulfill their action plans.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Cliff Peel of Cincinnati Inquirer. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm wondering what is the need you all hope to fill here? I'm in Cincinnati, where it seems like this is all that any university or education group talks about. And what is it that's not being done now or not being funded now that you hope to create progress on?
I think part of the answer to that question is that what these communities that have started work, and Cincinnati being a good example, has said is that they need access to more and better resources in terms of expertise and knowledge. And so making accessible to these communities these national organizations that have all of these different kinds of expertise, we think is very important. It's not so much the direct resources that we're going to provide to the communities, because those resources are mostly going to be used for the purposes that we talked about, which is convening purposes, which is giving the communities a chance to analyze their results better, et cetera. But really, it's the connection to all of those national organizations, the technical assistance, the support that those organizations that can provide, so that they can get to the results. The most important outcome that all of these communities are focused on is increasing educational attainment. That's the bottom line. And so this is a chance to give them a much bigger sort of portfolio of partners to work with than simply trying to do it on their own in that community. And so we're thinking that with this combination of actors that have such tremendous knowledge and expertise, that they'll be able to go a lot faster and be able to make programmatic adjustments and decisions on much more of a real-time basis than they'd be able to do on their own with limited resources.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Mary Niederberger of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Please go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to confirm with you, and I think this is accurate, that the reason why Pittsburgh was chosen is because we already have the very well-established Pittsburgh Promise program, which provides scholarship money for students coming out of the Pittsburgh public schools. Would that be correct to say?
That is correct. So, Celine Gabriel and Sean Butler are actually right down the street.
Oh, they're there now. Okay. Okay. So I know where to call them after this phone call. And then my next question is, and the Pittsburgh Promise has been really successful in not only raising money, but also recognizing that they had to get the kids ready to qualify for the money, because in the beginning they didn't. So there's a pretty good pipeline now from the city schools to post-secondary. I was wondering, though, if any part of this effort is focused toward people who could be several years or more out of school, who got out and tried to work on a high school degree and are realizing they're nowhere, could be in their late 20s, early 30s, and want to return and attain post-secondary education? Because the Promise isn't really looking at that. Is that an avenue that you want these cities to look at?
Absolutely. So we are really encouraging the cities to define their priorities. There are some cities where this adult learner issue has really taken root, and a lot of those cities are ones that are you have very robust economic development plans that rely very heavily on adult talent and can't wait for the pipeline to be developed, while some cities are working in this cradle-to-career context where they're really addressing every age range with a variety of different strategies. Pittsburgh specifically, yeah, we engage them because of the evidence of action that the Pittsburgh Promise has shown and the potential for further action that they can take up. The thing that I really love, and this is Haley speaking as Haley. The thing that I really love about the Promise program is that it really is an investment in students without regard to their conditions on the ground. It's an enabling device. It gives them hope and gives them the idea that college can be affordable for them under any circumstances. So this idea of the Promise being linked to a more robust community development, student preparation, institutional responsibility model is what we are hoping to achieve with the Pittsburgh group specifically. Kalamazoo is another Promise community that we've engaged, and they've adapted this over a longer period of time with a different funding model. Syracuse and Buffalo are CES to education communities, and they also have a Promise component in that as well, where their students are guaranteed post-secondary tuition coverage if they are a graduate of a specific school district in the city.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Matt Evans of the Triad Business Journal. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. My main question has actually been addressed, but would you mind sharing a thought or two about Greensboro's participation in this and what institutions will be involved?
Sure. Well, the Greensboro initiative is led by a wonderful guy named Steve Moore from the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, and they're partnering with the Guilford Area Technical Community College. And it's my understanding that they are focusing very hard on this adult population, the returning adults, knowing that their population of adults with some college and no degree in the area is such that there's a lot of room for improvement. I can certainly refer you to Steve. He's got far more and better information on exactly what they're going to do than I do, as we're still working out the plans. But I'm really Greensboro is one of those wonderful things that has sprung up out of nowhere, although they've been obviously thinking about higher education for a long time. And we were introduced several years ago, and it's been really amazing to watch this work grow and the city move toward embracing this mission.
Thank you very much.
And the next question would be from the line of Devin Katayama from WFPL. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm just hearing everybody else and certain initiatives that are going on in their cities. Here in Louisville, we have 55,000 degrees. I'm curious, because those goals are already set for that initiative, will the Lumina money be going toward new goals and new initiatives, or will it be for already existing goals?
That is a wonderful question. So the Louisville model has been around for quite a long time, and I think it even predates Lumina's goal. As such, we're really looking for the communities to honor their own goals, because ultimately, as I said, we're all concerned about the same objective, and that is increasing post-secondary attainment, whether it's 60% or 55,000 degrees, which translates into a 50% community attainment rate, or increasing year over year at a certain trajectory. We're very supportive of existing community goals because they are all indeed stacking toward Goal 2025.
You know, in all of these communities, what we're focused on is helping to support good ideas and efforts that are already underway. And so goal setting is often the first thing that needs to take place. And in many of these communities, Louisville being a good example, the goal has been in place for a while. What we're trying to do is provide that support, that technical assistance and guidance to help them achieve the results. And, the first step in the process, like setting the GPS, is setting the goal. That's the first thing you've got to do. But getting to that goal requires a lot of different approaches and strategies, and it's this whole array of technical assistance and support and added resources for some of the things that are missing in some of these communities. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to push them over the finish line, help them actually achieve the results the outcomes that they've defined for themselves, and literally increase educational attainment.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Paul Reed of Post Standard. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Assuming that, from what you've said, that Syracuse was chosen because of CES to education, I'm wondering if you can talk about who exactly, what group would actually receive the money you're talking about, and is that money separate from any kind of advice or help they would get from some of the institutions that you mentioned?
Well, if I'm understanding your question correctly, the dollars have actually, I think, been channeled through Syracuse University, that's acting as the fiscal agent for the Say Yes program in Syracuse. And if I'm understanding your question about the grant dollars being separate from the technical assistance resources that we've lined up, is that what your question
yes.
was? Okay. Right. Yes. To the extent we can, we have actually lined up a very robust set of in-kind services for the cities that will be available at no or very low cost for the cities, with the capacity for grant dollars to be used for anything that's not covered by the TA provision. So those data points that I mentioned earlier, the engagement with Student Clearinghouse, the engagement with Brookings Institution, all of the partners that I mentioned earlier, those engagements are all offered as a benefit of the partnership, because we are looking across the set of institutions, the set of organizations, and saying that, you know, this is an amazing array of expertise and networks and institutional sort of influence, and we want to offer those benefits to the cities that have put their stake in the ground around post-secondary attainment, Syracuse being one.
And I think that you said that each community will set its own goals, so that 50% is not necessarily the goal that will be set in each city. I was also interested. I know that these cities have to come up with their own plans, but I wonder if you could give some specific possible examples of how this would look actually on the ground. What would change? What kinds of programs might be instituted?
Sure. So I'll speak generically now, because I don't want to read into what Syracuse might ultimately choose to do. What we are going to be doing over the next 3 months is working with the cities to develop their action plans, and those obviously span over 3 years and are designed to, as Jamie mentioned, to really hasten and deepen the impact. So in some cities, you're going to see doubling down on current efforts, right, expanding the reach of programs, deepening the resources available to students and support modes and that kind of thing. In other cities, you're going to see the design and implementation of programs. So particularly with the cities that are focusing on adult learners, you may well see implementation of a very successful program called the Graduate Network, which originated in Philadelphia, which is all about finding and bringing back those with some college, no degree. So some of the action plans will be oriented around program implementation. Still others will be oriented around building out the collaboration, ensuring the partners are on the ground, working together, looking to align strategically with post-secondary institutions to improve enrollment, persistence, completion rates within the cities. So they're really going to span the gamut, because no city is starting from the exact same place. And while all the cities are shooting toward that goal, right, leading to 60% post-secondary attainment, even if their goal is not 60%, they will all shoot toward a different destination in a different mode. And I think that's actually one of the very cool things about this program, is it's respecting the city's ownership of all of this. They are the ones doing the work. They are the ones leading the way. So we want to be as supportive as we can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the next question from the line of Carolyn Thompson of the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I think you did just touch on this, but we do see a lot of talk about the skills gap between the jobs that are being created and the people who are looking for jobs. So cities, Buffalo is a Say Yes city, but cities are also encouraged to look beyond the current students in the K through 12 system and maybe find ways to bring back those people who don't have the necessary skills, who have already graduated?
So Yes, I mean, as I mentioned, that the tactics the cities are taking are different, and we will have some communities participating who will stay the course with K-12 post-secondary pipeline work because the course needs to be stayed without expansion into the adult learner population. But you will see more and more cities, I believe, as they look at their data. Very few cities, as we've looked across the top 100 metros in this nation, very, very few of them have an attainment rate with the some college, no degree population of less than 20%. More and more are hovering around 25%, between 22 and 25%, which, you know, a full quarter of the workforce has started college, has not finished. And our recent study by Tony Carnevale at the Georgetown Center for Education and Workforce has indicated that a very large proportion of those returning adults, those with some college and no degree, have the equivalent of 60 credits. Which is obviously the equivalent of an associate degree. Now, whether those credits stack up to make a degree program is the question, but there is a lot of latent skill of experience that we can draw from in increasing attainment by recognizing what these students already know, what they've already invested in their education, and what they've gained through other venues with work and military and other experiences. So, as Jamie mentioned, our design-build work is around, you know, creating the system, encouraging the system to move toward a more 20th century approach where we realize that learning does not happen exclusively in classrooms and the kinds of skills and knowledge adults with work experience and other experiences bring to the table are valuable and can be recognized through credential and contribute to attainment.
Thank you.
And the next question from the line of Kirk Carapeza from WGBH. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This morning here in Boston, we have 25 newly elected mayors from across the country who are talking about a number of challenges that their cities are facing. So I'm just wondering, you've already answered most of my questions, but I'm wondering what advice would you give those newly elected mayors who want to increase access for low-income students? Haley, you said not all cities are starting from the same point, but what advice would you give to those newly elected mayors?
You know, it's a great question because, you know, a few years back, there were very few mayors engaged in these kind of conversations, and certainly even fewer engaged in the questions about getting to post-secondary attainment because of the historic lack of connection from a financial perspective between cities and their budgets and what happens in post-secondary education. What I think we're starting to see happen in a growing number of cities, Louisville with their 55,000 degrees being a very good example, is that you've now got a succession of mayors who've made post-secondary attainment a priority. And I think that the advice that those mayors are giving to each other is that you've got to be an organizer, a convener of all of the players that you can bring the partners together, the employers, the civic leaders, the community-based organizations, and the educational institutions, and be a driver of those conversations. Now, in every city, it's not going to be a mayor, but in some cities, you can really see the mayors exerting leadership around these issues because they can bring the people to the table. They can, you know, give them the space and the opportunity to collaborate, and they can hold them publicly accountable in ways that are different if this is being managed out of some other entity in the community. So I think a lot of these mayors should be hearing that even though post-secondary education is often not a significant budget item for them, they still have a major responsibility for building the talent in their communities. And that talent is going to have to be post-secondary in nature for the vast majority of cities. So they've got to focus on increasing post-secondary attainment as one of their core goals.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Jim Williams of News Radio 84 WHAS. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, folks. And most of ours have been answered, but since Mr. Marisotis uses almost the identical language that Mayor Fisher does here when he speaks about 55,000 degrees. I think a lot of Louisvillians might have thought that the city was essentially alone in seeking this sort of thing. Obviously, you folks are working with a great many cities across the country. Is it fair to call this move toward more educational attainment a trend that's picking up speed nationwide?
Yeah, indeed. And I think that Louisville deserves a lot of credit for helping to be a role model in that regard. And I think that, again, a few years back, we didn't see a whole lot of focus in this area. A lot of very good and important focus has been placed on increasing K-12 education. That's got to continue, and that's a component in several of the initiatives that we're supporting here. But as I said, the finish line can't be a high school credential anymore. There simply aren't enough jobs being created for people with high school credentials to allow communities to grow and prosper. It's got to be post-secondary. And what we've seen with 55,000 degrees and some of the other trailblazers like through Strive is that we are we're witnessing opportunities for significant growth of this effort across a wide variety of cities, and Lumina wants to help make that happen. We're working with cities that have the core elements in place, but we want to give them some opportunity to go faster, to be able to make decisions more quickly, and to learn from each other, to be truly a network of partners as cities that can actually move the needle on the national attainment goals.
All right, thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Jennifer Lloyd of Express News. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I was wondering if, as many others had said, if Mayor Castro's SA 2020 vision plan was part of what contributed to our being selected in this process, and also which organizations would be getting the money in San Antonio.
Sure. Jean Russell, who heads up the education work at SA 2020, is right down the street, as I mentioned. They are the organization that really saw this work bubble to the top. We were introduced to Jean and SA 2020 through the National League of Cities, which is obviously a mayoral-led group of leaders who are focusing on post-secondary education, and that work really bubbled to the top as one of the really a highlight of city-led groups that are working to increase attainment for not only the K-12 pipeline and adult students, but specifically for Latino students. And we thought that was very important and are really supportive and looking forward to seeing what San Antonio's plan emerges.
Thank you.
And the next question from the line of Ron Gonzalez of Orange County Register. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. I was wondering if you could tell me why Santa Ana was selected, who the money will go to, and who from the city is at the conference.
Sure. Well, just before I came over, I was over at the conference, obviously, and I came back and I said, Sarah Lundquist from Santa Ana College, what a tremendous leader. So Santa Ana was selected not because they are probably one of the longest-standing community partnerships focused on post-secondary education in the nation. They've been around since 1983 in various stages. The funding here will go directly to Santa Ana College, which is working across this larger collaborative. I need to refer to my notes, which I don't have with me, on who else is attending the conference. But we chose Santa Ana because it is one of those communities that has stuck with it. They have shown evidence of action and results. They are showing themselves, right now, as national thought leaders, I think, on this, knowing exactly everything that can go wrong, everything that can go right, and being very honest about the kinds of conditions, the kinds of priorities that a city needs to set. And I would encourage you to get in touch with Sarah Lundquist as the point person on this effort.
And we do have one last question here from the line of Lucas Bechtol from Herald Press. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering with the Fort Wayne region, Indiana, I was wondering if the Northeast Indiana Regional Partnership played a role in that, especially with the Vision 2020, and will actually the entire Northeast Indiana Regional Partnership benefit from this?
Yes, absolutely. Ryan Twist and Katie Silman are over at the conference, and Ryan is the point person on the goal, on the Big Goal Collaborative, and the Northeast Indiana Partnership. They are the point, and they'll be working across that larger region to engage students to increase completion. I know they're working with a variety of post-secondary institutions as well. I would encourage you to get in touch with Ryan and Katie to discuss the particulars of this effort. We're so pleased to have them. I think they're a very unique and ambitious model, and really I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they influence a very diverse region centered in Fort Wayne, which is a city, obviously, but with a lot of surrounding small towns and in very rural areas. We're very excited about that.
Okay, thank you.
And that does conclude all of the questions in queue.
Okay, well, thank you again for joining us for today's media conference call. If you have any additional questions or an interest in arranging interviews with any of our speakers here at Lumina, please contact me by email at landerson@luminafoundation.org or by phone at 317-951-5316. Thank you again for your participation. We really appreciate it.